Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. The morning after he'd gotten into a big fist fight with one of his students, the grade school teacher walked nonchalantly into the classroom and laid his .45 caliber Colt revolver on the desk. "Would anyone like to continue yesterday's scrap?" he asked. No one spoke up. So the school day got started, a day not that much different from any other, in Professor Ray Van Buren Jackson's classroom in Silver Lake, Oregon in 1906. You can't see the scare quotes in the podcast, but professor is in quotes because Mr. Jackson never actually was a professor. He was a school teacher. And one has to hope that his classroom wasn't the typical educational experience for students in early 1900s Oregon. For starters, Jackson was by any account not a man you'd want to entrust your kids to. At the very least, he was an embezzler, a forger, a convicted felon, and an unusually cruel man. He'd come to the school district fresh from the state prison, where he'd served a total of 3 years for robbery and embezzling. He may also have been a serial killer. Nobody figured that out at the time. It took 7 years of serious detective work on the part of Christmas Valley historian Melanie Tupper, sifting through old newspaper articles and court documents, to make the connections. And today, 100 years later, it would be pretty tough to come up with actual definitive proof. Still, Tupper found an astonishing array of dramatic and sometimes deadly events, run-ins with neighbors, disappearances of large sums of money, and high-profile unsolved murders that swirled around Jackson's life, and which paint a pretty grim picture of the man himself, serial killer or no. The full story is in Tupper's book, The Sandy Knoll Murder, but here are some of the highlights. Ray Van Buren Jackson grew up in Sodaville near Lebanon. He was left-handed, and his teachers were determined to fix this defect, which they did, although he had to be held back 2 years in school to do it. The ability to write with either hand carried with it an ability to imitate almost anyone's handwriting. This ability would prove useful later in his career. Jackson followed in the footsteps of his older brother by going to college and getting a teaching certificate. Everything seemed to be going well until the summer of 1895, when two things happened that Tupper suggests pushed him over the edge and into true psychosis. First, his favorite uncle was run over by a railroad train before his eyes at the bottom of Singer Hill in Oregon City in one of the most grisly railroad accidents you can imagine. The train collided with the wagon Jackson's uncle was driving, killing his horses and literally running over his head while Jackson watched. Singer Hill, by the way, is that steep thing that runs up the side of the cliff just downriver from the elevator in Oregon City. If you're familiar with the terrain there, you're probably familiar with it. And you can probably imagine how easy it would be for a train to not be noticed until just way too late if that intersection there with the railroad tracks were uncontrolled. That's exactly what happened. Well, after this, when Jackson got home to Beaver Creek, where he was working as a teacher in the local school, he learned he was wanted by the law for having forged a couple vouchers. Jackson went on the lam for a year or so, during which he was able to continue teaching at Klamath Falls, but eventually he was caught and sent to the state pen for 2 years. He was released in 1898, but a year later he was back in again, this time for a robbery committed in Baker County. If you're keeping track, the places in which Ray Van Buren Jackson had established his bad reputation included the entire Willamette Valley plus Jackson and Josephine counties in the south and Baker County in the east. There wasn't much of Oregon left in which Jackson could get a fresh start, and people travel. If Jackson set up housekeeping in, say, Shanico or Bend, sooner or later somebody would travel to town and recognize him. But the remote stock land of Lake County was different. The nearest railroad was more than 100 rocky, bone-jarring wagon road miles away, and Silver Lake was on the way to absolutely nowhere, You didn't come through town unless you were coming to town. Hard characters often came to Lake County to get away from reputations they'd forged in gentler places. Some of them took a liking to it and stuck around even after it was no longer necessary for them to do so. Well, now, as he left the state pen for the last time, Jackson did exactly that. He took a job teaching first through eighth grade at Silver Lake, moved into the schoolhouse, and started calling himself Professor Jackson, although he wasn't credentialed as a professor and had never taught anything above the eighth grade level. It's hard to imagine something like this happening today, a man who spent 3 solid years in the slammer on charges that included something like robbery, which of course is different from theft and stuff like that because it involves an actual threat, you know, sticking a revolver in somebody's face and saying, "Give me all your money or I'll shoot you." Being put in charge of small children after that? But nobody seems to have asked any probing questions about the man's background, and perhaps Silver Lake's options were limited. Oregon teachers were paid rather poorly in the early 1900s. I don't want to get into whether they're paid poorly today or not. Since I am a teacher, I've kind of got a dog in that fight. In any case, Jackson soon established a reputation as a strict disciplinarian. He kept a pair of buggy whips in the classroom and used them, both the butts and the lashes, on older students who misbehaved. Accounts of his classroom management and things he said to others in the community suggest his goal in meting out corporal punishment may have been more than just discipline, that he may have actually been deriving pleasure from it. He confided to a neighbor that he always took a single-action Colt revolver and baseball bat to class with him, and at least one of his students narrowly avoided serious injury when Jackson hurled a heavy glass inkwell at his head. Jackson's run at Silver Lake schoolteacher was relatively short. He was there from 1902 to 1908. But it didn't end the way you might think it would. He was promoted, not fired. In 1908, Jackson was elected superintendent of Lake County Schools and moved to Lakeview. It was in Lakeview that Jackson's career in education was definitively put to an end. Once he was in charge of the whole show, the temptation to make grabs from the till was apparently too much. 2 years later, he was indicted for embezzling money from the district and resigned in 1911. After that, Jackson was involved in a number of ventures involving cattle ranching, retail business, and homesteading. He never went back to teaching school. The most extraordinary part of Jackson's life, though, was his personal involvement in at least 6 suspicious homicides, 3 of which were declared suicides and 3 of which remain officially unsolved. And that's not including his own death, which was also declared a suicide in 1938. We'll talk about those 6 deaths in the next column, which will be coming out 1 week from today on the podcast. This article was first published on September 4th of 2011 under the headline, "Schoolteacher Ray Jackson May Have Been a Serial Killer." Key sources for the story included works by Melanie Tupper and Earl F. Moore. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 500 stories originally created and published in newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulp Lit Productions, pulp-lit.com, which is a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under Creative Commons license, type CC by SA 4.0. Basically, that means you can do anything you want with the content. Reprint it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, fire up the old Cessna and skywrite it, whatever you want to do, as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But hey, if you need either A or B waived, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. Don't let my old middle school principal fool you. I actually do play well with others. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode, or maybe you'd like to get together and have a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and talk history, email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. And the next one will be a Friday episode, which means it'll be brand new. So until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.